My guest is artist Jenny Holzer. When she was in art school, she began collecting diagrams from textbooks and became more interested in the captions than the diagrams. This collection led to the kind of work she's been doing since the late 70s. She writes one-line sayings for electronic signs, either existing electronic billboards or signs that she might create for a specific site. Generally, her art can be seen in public places, flashing above Times Square, in an urban shopping mall. Holzer started creating art for public places through a series of posters she called truisms. She plastered her posters all over Manhattan, and when I spoke with Jenny Holzer, I asked her about them.
It's a series of one-liners on almost any possible topic, written from any point of view. There are far-left ones, there are far-right ones, there are good common-sense ones.
Where did these come from?
From my mind, I would write to various subjects, such as war or death or love or all those classic things. And then I'd try to make them sound as if they were real truisms.
Oh, really? You wrote these?
Yeah.
It's funny because they're alphabetical. They start with A, starting with what a little knowledge can go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
You could have very easily said a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Better to have fresh ones.
We are supposed to then digest these things that you were saying and make them apply to us?
I hope they make the reader go through some kind of process of self-definition that you can go through and pick out the ones that you hate or the ones that you like, and hopefully maybe at the end of it be somewhat more tolerant just because you've had to subject yourself to all of them.
Hmm.
And they all seem equally true.
These truisms that were initially put on a poster, did you get that reaction from people?
I would find when I would go back and look at the posters that I'd put in the street that people would check things and say yes afterwards or would cross out things and say no. And then finally, sometimes people would write messages back to me.
Hmm. When did you decide to then move on to electronic signs?
I think when I became tired of skulking around in the middle of the night, freezing and getting covered in wheat paste, I decided to move on. Also, when I first had access to the board at Spectacolor in Times Square, I thought it was kind of a logical 20th century way to put out my information.
How did that happen?
Another artist, Jane Dixon, organized the project in conjunction with the Public Art Fund, and ever since then, I think then being 1981 or 1982, a different artist has been able to put up material on the sign. And I was one of the first ones who did it.
Is it a very expensive proposition to be working in electronic signs?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes it's absolutely free when I use a sign that's up than an existing sign, and my things are just slotted in with advertising or the regular public service announcements. Then it's cost absolutely nothing at all.
Hmm. Where else has that happened other than Times Square?
Many places. Just finished a project in San Francisco. I had the scoreboard at Candlestick Park during a Mets and Giants game. Had the sign on the freeway in San Francisco, and actually had all the little electronic signs on the Muni on the subway system there.
What did they say? What did these signs say?
On the subway system, I think almost everything I've ever written. And in the ballpark, I think we had things like lack of charisma can be fatal, and raise boys and girls the same way. That was my admonition to the fans.
The whole idea of putting this kind of work, this quote-unquote art, in the midst of something or some place where one would not normally expect to find quote-unquote art, to be moved in such a way. People were surprised by this.
I think so. For me, it's almost necessary that people don't even consider whether it's art or not, that they just judge it at face value. And this happens when they just come across it as an anonymous poster. Then they just think about what it says rather than what it is or who said it.
Mm. Now your things are being seen in museums. Mm-hmm. I actually saw your installation. It was part of your survival series,
mm-hmm.
and I was at the Pompidou Museum
yeah.
in Paris, and I saw this electronic sign flashing at me. It couldn't have been. How big are they?
This is a relatively big one. I think it's about 10 feet long and 3 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
It was flashing on the wall, and it said, "Finding extreme pleasure will make you a better person if you're careful about what thrills you." I giggled. I was provoked. I took a picture of it. I have a picture of your installation in my photo album.
This is amazing.
Do you really think so? To be moved in that sort of way? I mean, I've sort of translated it into another another art form, I guess.
No, I'm tickled. I'm always, I mean, when you're doing public art, the number one thing is to have people notice. That's always the crux of it.
And that is your
I'm glad that you noticed that it was there.
And that is your number one thing, to have it noticed. Doesn't it get noticed differently in a museum? I was very comfortable in the museum. I felt, well, here I am. I can stand here, and I can appreciate it.
There's a major difference. The surprise, of course, is lost, but what's gained is that you are in a more comfortable setting, and it's more like going to the library when you're in a museum. You can have the leisure to contemplate it if you're at all interested. Mm-hmm. In the street, though, you do have the kind of shock and surprise value.
Do you censor yourself?
Yes.
You do?
It's necessary when you do public work to make sure that what I say is appropriate to the situation, isn't inflammatory just for the sake of being inflammatory. And then I also edit my things sometimes if they're just stupid. I have to make sure that those don't get out.
Some of them are very funny.
Yeah, that I think you have to leaven anything you do, and especially some of my things have to be leavened with some humor.
So getting people to laugh was part of your intent.
Sure, sure.
I found one. It's from your survival series. It says, spit all over someone with a mouthful of milk if you want to find out something about their personality fast.
Sure, it's the basic personality scan. You can find out a lot about somebody with that.
Seems a bit dangerous to me to try as an experiment, however.
Maybe so.
One as well, which is not quite as humorous, but one that gave a great pause for thought, for me anyway, it was, die fast and quiet when they interrogate you, or live so long that they are ashamed to hurt you anymore.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because I'm a member of Amnesty International, I keep reading torture cases, and so that was one written maybe in response to some of the things that I'd read.
Do you hope that you're going to change people's minds at all?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Try anyway.
Are you successful?
Occasionally.
How do you measure that?
Eavesdropping.
Do you?
That's my main source of feedback. I will go to wherever one of my things is playing, and I'll listen to see what kind of conversations it starts, or what kind of debates, or what kind of arguments in some cases.
What things have you learned from the people that are within the art world, and are they different than maybe what you had learned by just sort of eavesdropping?
The difference, I guess, within the art world would be that your work is discussed relative to other pieces of art, and that's always interesting. I want to succeed formally as well as with my content, I guess I'd say. So that's something that can be discussed by experts.
What kind of relationships are now being drawn between what you're doing and what's come in the been happening in the past?
People think about the conceptual people, and that it's maybe anti-commodity and uses language. I think there's somebody would trace a relationship with that. I think people relate it to political art that's been going on for quite some time. Those sort of parallels. And also sometimes when I will use something like an electronic sign, people talk about what that just means in formal terms.
And what does it mean in formal terms?
I guess it'd be a high-tech artist or a light artist.
What are you doing now?
Trying to write some things for television, for 15-second spots that will be placed where normal commercials go.
Can you do that? Are you going to buy the time for this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they'll let you do this?
I trust so. Mm. I'm working on a few ends. Hopefully I'll be able to execute it.
You're also working with granite benches?
Mm-hmm.
This seems like a total change of direction from something that twinkles by and is gone to something that is there.
I started, I think, one reason because I was tired of having electronic signs blow up. I wanted something eternal in Stone Age. Then the other reason was I also wanted a chance to start writing things longer than one-liners. I wanted to expand to at least paragraph length, and a bench is a more contemplative type object, so I can put something longer and more complex on it.
Thank you very much, Jenny Holzer, for being with us.
Thank you.
When I spoke to artist Jenny Holzer, she was in Philadelphia installing an electronic exhibit in the Bourse Building, an indoor shopping center, as part of the Constitution's bicentennial celebration. Since our conversation, the plug has been pulled on the exhibit until the organizers have a chance to install a large disclaimer saying the content does not reflect the opinions of the management.